committee of the whole meeting of the Glenton Park District to order. Lisa, please call the roll and note the time.
Right, 7:05. Member Boren?
Yes.
Member Covey?
Present.
Member Ludden?
Yes.
We're going to skip under Chair Brooks?
Yes.
And I see Member Underdunk?
Yep.
I see the top of his head. He's good.
Two of our commissioners only able to know.
Okay.
All right. Awesome. Hi, Dudley.
Hello.
Okay. So you've got him, right, Lisa?
I do. Yep.
Okay. Very good. So it's our practice not to address questions at this time. However, we will take comments under advisement. For our posted policy during the coronavirus crisis, all comments should have been submitted via email to Lisa Shepherd prior to the meeting. Lisa Shepherd, please read any public comments received via email.
There was no comments received via email.
Okay, very good. Then we will move on to updated programs and facilities operations. Lisa and all department heads will update the board on our district operations.
Excellent. We have Bobby put a PowerPoint up for today. We're just going to go through it, just a very brief one. Okay, we're going to do update on our programs and facilities in the COVID-19 era. So Glen Cove Beach and Bodie Beach. As of right now, we have reached our season pass cap limit set by the board and staff. Important note that beach passes went on sale on April 1st. I think it was May 5th or 2nd. The board moved to have only season passes sold. And as of yesterday at noon, we put a cap on them. We just have a few remaining, and we're saving those in case any members figure out they need to add everybody from their household in. So as of noon yesterday, we had accommodated all residents that wanted to pass. Right now, we have approximately how many residents, Bobby, on the wait list?
29.
And how many non-residents?
152.
So as of right now, that's where we stand with that. So we're just going to leave those on the wait list for now, see what happens when we open the water, have a couple hot days in a row, kind of see what the usage is like, and school gets out and things like that. And then they make the recommendation to come back to you to sell more passes at that time if we feel it's safe to do so.
How many residents?
Question?
Oh, I'm sorry, Dudley. Go ahead.
Question. Will we also be testing the water quality on the 5th?
Yep, we'll talk about that in a second as soon as we get to that item.
Okay.
So as far as the resident, non-resident ratio, Bobby, what's the resident? He has it right in front of him. Ratio right now?
It's just over 78%.
So 78% residents, the rest non-residents, so it's a really good ratio of residents. But still accommodating our neighbors. And it appears that most of our non-residents are in the surrounding areas around us. So that's nice too. So on Friday, June 5th, we plan on opening the water and swim at your own risk. And that is after consulting with our attorney that we are within our right to do so. And they indicated that we are. Will Met opened up their water today. Highland Park is opening up on June 20th. Wilmot is also doing swim at your own risk at this time, and they may transition to lifeguards at a later date. We are testing the water, and that's why we're waiting until Friday, because we're going to test it for a couple days first before we do with the recent storms and everything. And then we also wanted to give us ourselves time to get communication of the rules out to our pass holders. And Bobby, can you just update the board on what some of those rules are?
Yeah, absolutely. So we've set the swim area. It needs some minor adjustments after settling over the last couple of days. So the rules that will go out, the communication will be that swimming is only allowed within the designated swim area that is marked. We're not going to allow any inflatables or rafts or water wings or water toys in the water. We don't traditionally do that anyway, especially on days like today where the westerly winds, they can get pushed out really, really fast. We're only allowing Coast Guard approved PFDs in the water. So we know rock trolling as usual. And then the industry standard with unguarded facilities and beaches are that all persons under age 16 must be accompanied by a parent, guardian, or responsible person 16 years or older. And then beach management reserves the right to close the water due to high bacteria and high surf. I would note as well, we are having a surge in requests for paddle boards and kayaks right now from both residents and non-residents. It's pretty significant. I think over 30 people down the wait list in 5 days. So with the beach being smaller, that's a challenge. We are also having to communicate to people that paddle boards and kayaks can't be walked down the ramp on a daily launch for various reasons, including liability and safety. But people are really kind of pushing the boundaries on that one. So in case you hear that, we have not allowed daily launches for a long time, and we don't continue to do that. Hopefully that will ease off if we are able to open up rentals later on this season if we're allowed.
I'm sorry, go ahead, Lisa.
I'm just going to say, could you tell why we don't allow daily launches at our beach?
Yeah, so daily launches, a lot of the times it's very dangerous to walk that equipment down the ramp if it's busy. We also tend to find that those daily launches don't understand our rules. Our staff don't know who they are. We don't know their competency. They tend to not know what to do in an emergency. They tend to go out in days when it's not suitable, and they haven't signed any of our waivers. So there's a lot more liability to the district, plus also we feel it's not fair to the people who pay for the storage on the beach.
And in addition, this year we're not doing water rescues, so it would make it even that much more dangerous for anybody bringing daily launches down. So we wouldn't know who's doing it, wouldn't be able to observe that. Josh, you have a question?
Yeah, Bobby, I thought I heard you say that you're requiring Coast Guard approved PFDs. Does that mean you can't swim without a PFD?
No, that's actually a good point to clarify. It means that if you are wearing a life jacket, it has to be a Coast Guard approved life jacket. So I'll make sure we clarify if you wear a life jacket, it has to be Coast Guard approved.
You're just trying to avoid people claiming that water wings are a life jacket? Is that
correct? Exactly. That's what tends to happen is they put water wings or non-approved Coast Guard floating apparatus, and they deflate or they can't swim, and so that's why we require that. We normally do that when we have lifeguards on duty.
Also,
thanks.
There's like swim that they put around their waist and then the arms, and those are top heavy. You can go right over, so they only allow Coast Guard approved. Lisa?
Yeah, quick question, Bobby. Just to clarify, this policy is typical. It's every summer we've had the same policy, so that I happen to be there when a very distraught, harassable potential customer came with a board, no beach pass, and wanted to just launch it. But the response was wonderful from your staff. But it isn't a situation where I've always been able to do this. Why can't I do it this year? It's just our policy. Okay. Thanks.
Yeah, right. We've always had that policy. That's a good question. Clarification. Any other questions before we move to the next slide?
I'm assuming that opening the water does not include the spray pass for this.
No, it does not. That's great to clarify. We are not allowed to open the playground for spray pass yet. Good clarification. All right, and basically we're able to open the water because there's really not any clear in the executive order that prohibits us from doing that. I would like to note that IDNR or the governor's office could come back and say we're closing all bodies of water, but as of right now, they have not done that.
Sorry, Lisa, I have one more question for Bobby.
Sure, go right ahead.
Obviously, all the Park District water fountains are still shut off unless that's changed in the last couple of days. I guess I worry a little bit that on a hot day, people at the beach might be dehydrated. Do we have a facility for people to fill up a water bottle or something in a safe way?
That's a great question. Chris, do you want, I guess, Chris has been the one dealing with water fountains. You want to answer that, Chris?
Yeah, so Josh, what we're working on right now is a bottle fill station with multiple apertures. So anyone who brings a bottle to the beach can fill that. We're looking at doing one on the outside of the beach and the inside of the facility as well. You know, we're not directing people to drink out of the sinks. I think that if we start to see, you know, heat-related emergencies, we're probably going to have to make a judgment call with the drinking fountain down at the beach, but we'll have to really evaluate that as we go.
When do you expect to have those bottle fill stations?
Within 2 to 3 weeks. So okay. It's likely we're going to have to make a decision before that if we have very high temperatures.
Okay, thanks, guys.
And we have, for the rest of the park system, Chris is turning on the water bottle fillers throughout the system, but keeping the drinking fountain heads closed off. So the
fountains are on and ready to go. So if we make the decision, you know, hey, we want to open fountains this weekend, it's not the typical, you know, 4 to 8 day process that usually takes to activate water fountains. So
right now, the governor's office is recommending keeping them closed. So.
Are all the concessions are completely closed this summer at the beach?
That's correct.
Is that that's our desire, or that is mandated?
They recently in phase 3 allow you to open concession stands. We do not have a provider that wanted to do that this year.
I say it may be wise to think about affordably selling bottled water.
Mm-hmm. We don't have a no bottled water policy at the park district. Is that not true? So no single use plastic.
Except for when people bring it.
Well, we can't tell them they can't.
We don't provide it for them.
We don't provide it.
There are other options. There's boxed water. There's tin water. But just a thought. If you're really concerned about dehydration, the safest way is unfortunately, Lisa Brooks, the safest thing to do is single use. Not the best for the environment, but by far is the safest.
We can look to see if there's a possibility of getting a vending machine down there. We just wanted to prohibit people from giving staff cash.
Yeah,
that's fair. But we'll look to see if there's availability. In the past, we did not have a vending machine provider that wanted to put a vending machine down there. So we'll look at it. It wouldn't be a bad idea to have some for emergency use, just bottles for emergency use that if someone's really... We see struggling that we have that. That's not a big investment. We can do that. Have the binder in place.
That's a good idea, Lisa.
And we can just promote as we message the people who have passes as the summer progresses, and we're messaging them about policy, don't forget, and all that kind of thing, just to remind them that they should need to bring their own. Once we have a bottle filler, bottles, and that we have a bottle filler, we'll bring your own water to prevent dehydration. Just to remind,
you know. Yep. We can definitely put on that on the announcement that's going out, but then we'll also do the emergency water just in case. Sounds good. We have water there and Gatorade for staff, so we'll make sure that we have some for that. All right, you want to go to the next slide, Bobby?
Yep.
Any other questions on the beach? If not, we're going to move on to Children's Circle and Summer Camp, just to give a fast overview of that. Okay. Bob, you want to give an update on Children's Circle operations?
Absolutely. As you're aware, we opened up to almost full capacity yesterday with Children's Circle. We had 47 students return that day. The program already has 8 emergency care children in the program in addition to those 47. We have another 11 coming back on June 15th. You will be aware that we also send a communication to the parents, giving them that extra flexibility to return. None of the parents who had decided to come back on the first took us up on that offer. We're still at 27 students undecided for various reasons, whether it be program related or personal or financial. Parents are still trying to figure that out. We have had 8 students drop. Some multiple from a family, a lot of it is due to personal circumstances. We did lose some of our part-time students, which had been grandfathered in. We had been phasing those out, but they were currently grandfathered in since they started the program, and they'll be replaced with full-time students. By part-time, I mean they may have done 2 or 3 day options, and they were offset with other 2 or 3 day options. as of 4 o'clock tonight, our summer registration was at 35 for our youth and preschool summer care option. We have had our priority one, which was our full day option, and then our priority two yesterday. The numbers are slightly less than we thought. We are opening up tomorrow for our priority three group. So noting that capacity is 50, but it could be expanded a little bit more if we use WAP. We're right on track where we'll probably hit that 50 number if we get some enrollment tomorrow.
Any questions on that? Okay, in addition to that, the rec and facilities team has been very busy. If you can see the list of offerings and services that begin in June, everything from adult classes, art, youth enrichment, sports and fitness. Bobby, you want to elaborate on any of those?
Yeah, so we're doing a mix of virtual. We've heard that some people want some virtual options for their kind of at-home camp. We're also following the governor's Restore Illinois guidance, and we're going to be offering some in-person programs, mostly outside right now, with no pickup games, no competition, but more of clinic-style fitness class, activities that are more socially distanced that can follow the governor's guidelines. And staff have been working around the clock to try and get a 8-to-10-page June brochure ready to send out to people for classes starting next week. It's quite a short turnaround because we're working with contractors. The contractors, because of staffing issues, are trying to spool up as quickly as they can, and we're trying to use our internal staff too. So we fully expect this summer to offer more summer enrichment outdoor activity programs than usual because our camp offerings are changing. We'll look to offer those type of virtual brochures or digital brochures in July and August to give people the opportunity to get out to programming that might be 1 to 2 hours and take the place of a part day or half day camp.
Will your camps be participating in some of these programs as well?
They won't be directly in the programs themselves. We're going to, some of these are going to be at WASP and other places. We will do similar activities with the camp. So the camp, the goal will be to have some outdoor tents, outdoor activities, and as the restrictions ease, and we can do more activities to build those into the day. So, for example, if things eased off and we could get some camper's choice with ceramic glass in a phase four, we would look to do those activities.
Any other questions? Okay, Bobby, can you go on to the next one?
Yep.
Open amenities. In phase three, we are opening a variety of different amenities. Obviously, we opened, and all these were with modifications, but we've opened disc golf. We've opened all the tennis courts, taking down nets in between, or if there's two nets, just one. On Friday, we will open up basketball courts, and that's for independent play or immediate family members only, so that's not group games. It's more if you want to go shoot, play fours, or play two-on-two with your immediate family members, not designed for 5-on-5 pickup games. We'll have signage at the basketball court for that. At the athletic fields, we're open for practices, so Glencoe Youth Baseball, we'll be using them for groups of 10 or less. Drills only, no games, so those are all allowed in phase two. Our phase three, you've seen we are doing deck hockey, again, instructional. You might see some new sports classes and things like that. So that's what we're looking at, phase three. So pretty much everything but playgrounds. Chris, do you want to talk about parks and facility maintenance?
I do have a few updates.
Oh, yeah. Wait, hold on. I'm sorry.
Question.
Yes,
Does that mean that the parks and the picnic tables are open for groups of 10 or less?
We have not opened those. We don't have clarification, but we will check into that. We have some picnic tables out there and such. It's supposed to be with your immediate family member only. But what we'll probably do is start opening up one picnic table in each area, not have a lot together in a park, so that there's only like one table there for a family picnic or 10 or less. So we will probably look to open those up also.
And what is the timetable? Again, the signs are still up today for most places.
For what?
The closure of the tennis courts and think some other facilities. I can't remember exactly the other.
Okay, we'll look at signage that's out there, because we have all the, we're starting to put new signs up at those amenities. So we'll do a sign inventory and take down ones that aren't applicable anymore. So thank you for doing
okay.
that.
Okay, great.
All right, Chris?
So I have a brief. Oh,
hold on.
Go ahead.
I apologize. Can you just clarify on the field?
Sure.
You're still not going to be allowing like teams to rent. You're just allowing usage. Is that correct?
Well, Glencoe Youth Baseball, well, they get priority over any rentals. So they have to, our affiliates have to submit to us their list of procedures they're going to do to make sure they're in compliance with the governor's order, and then we'll send an email back saying, okay, you understand, we'll list all the orders, and they have to respond back that they understand. So as of this time, we're only doing with our affiliate, and we'll keep on evaluating if we want to open up to a private contractor or not. I guess it will not be right now, because we're still not done planning our activities on the field. So just really Glencoe Youth Baseball, AYSO has not contacted us. They have not reached back out to see if they want to do it.
Sorry to interrupt.
No, that's good. That's good.
A lot of information, so sometimes I'm still thinking.
And tennis courts, for example, you will see those marked off for private use. Those private use are our contractors that are doing lessons to us. So those are the only field permits I have approved so far, or court permits, is from Glencoe Youth Baseball and our tennis instructors.
You may see something with Hot Shots doing some softball, but that's going to be it working with GVA. They tend to work with them for softball-related activities.
So if they're an independent contractor that works for us, you might see them out in our field. If they offer a program through us. That way we can ensure that they're following those mandates. Okay?
Okay.
Okay, Chris?
So I have a few brief updates for the board. First and foremost, staffing levels. So we recently lost two of our full-time parks laborers. While we're sad to see David and Adam go, we're very excited for them as they take on the next steps in their career. Both employees have taken on additional responsibilities in their new positions, so these were career growth opportunities, so we're very excited for them. Due to that, we had to take a look at our contractual mowing and horticulture contracts as we lost those 80 labor hours per week. So based on our staffing levels and advancing into phase three, we activated the mowing contract. Included will be landscaping support in the high-profile parks such as Lakefront, Hawk, Taketh, Friends, a few other areas as well. So in regards to Lakefront Park, we're seeing a surge in non-resident use in Lakefront Park, particularly the non-residents without beach passes. They get turned away from the facility, and they're setting up in Lakefront Park for the day, so bag chairs, frisbee, that kind of thing. As a result, we have added additional trash receptacles and portalets. We were dealing with people with small children saying, my children have to go to the bathroom, I need to get into the beach, things like that. So by adding those portalets to Lakefront Park, we eliminated that conflict for the staff at the beach. So in addition, the park is requiring additional daily grooming due to this higher use, but we've been able to keep up with it so far. So any particular questions related to the park system?
I have to say I'm really pleased that somebody is getting new jobs and following their dreams, I guess.
No.
I'm sad it's our guys, but it's a positive story in a dark time.
I totally agree with you. You know, these were staff that these were like kind of once-in-a-lifetime career opportunities, so they were sad to go, especially under the circumstances, but you just can't stand in the way of somebody, you know, going for that type of a career experience, so.
I have to say that Chris is really good at, we all will hire someone at a labor, I guess, position, but he provides them the opportunity and training to help them get to that next level, so we're really preparing them for the next stage. And while we're a small district, it gives us opportunity to teach them a lot of different things. We just don't have that next level up for some of those for their career advancement or pay advancement. So we are, the two that are leaving, we're really sad to lose, but we're very happy for them and their families.
Yeah, it's really a textbook go-to-grow situation. I mean, you know, like Lisa said, there just isn't that opportunity for advancement based on the size of our group.
Yeah.
you're not expecting to refill those positions, but are going obviously as subcontractors, so that is the best option for now?
Well, I think we probably need to evaluate as we go. I mean, based on moving into phase four, what happens with youth athletics, I mean, I think for the time being, we really just kind of have to catch up with things and figure out what the new loads are going to be based on phase three. I'm not in a rush to post jobs next week, but I think we have to do a thorough evaluation and figure out what's the best direction for the district before we can come back to the board with a recommendation like that.
Okay, exactly. We don't anticipate having, not filling those indefinitely. We'll need them once we gear back up. In the short term, hopefully we can manage some of the additional mowing and horticulture contracts. So.
Yes, so.
In the short term, variable cost is better than fixed cost.
Exactly. That's what we're thinking.
Really, I think we want to see what level of service we can provide with the contractors, and if that's going to meet the expectations that we've set in the community before we, you know, further that evaluation and come back to the board with a recommendation.
Good.
Any additional questions on the park system facilities? I do have two brief capital project updates, specifically related to the halfway house. Our tiles have arrived, so the tile factory in Ohio is open, and we were the first job to be done, so we have our roof tiles. Our project is scheduled to be completed this month. We're working around hot days, so the goal is not to have the roofers down there when it's 100 degrees and the beach is busy, so taking a lot of coordination to execute that. In addition, we're proceeding with the bidding for the overlook and retaining wall project that we're sharing with the Village of Glencoe. As you may recall, we were scheduled to make repairs to the north/Schumann overlook, as well as a large 25-foot section of retaining walls adjacent to the halfway house. So bid results from this bid process will be brought back to the board for approval before the project is executed. The project is scheduled for the fall of 2020.
Is this something that we already had agreement with the village? I'm just concerned because this is some of their medians and definitely cutting them up. Just curious.
Yeah, we have had talked about this, and this is one of the things that they indicate they are not cutting from their budget. So it's something we talked prior to this. We don't have anything in writing, but because of the nature of this, at this time, can't guarantee anything, but we'll know before we sign any document they are not cutting this.
Thank you. Thank you, Lisa.
All right, updates on phase three, more information. Like I indicated, we cannot open playgrounds that's specifically spelled out in the governor's order. It was under an unusual place. It was under, like, by zoos and amusement parks and stuff like that, but it was in there. So, and that also means playgrounds and such. We can do one-on-one personal training. We can't open the fitness center, but we can do personal training in the fitness center, along with outdoor fitness classes. We can do outdoor small group youth sports classes and other recreation classes that we talked about already. We can do one-on-one recreation services indoors, such as karate. So that's something that's been asked for by that provider. We, at this time, are keeping, we're not opening take-in for walk-in registration. However, we have called back Jill and Amy to the registration desk because we're really picking up the registration. They've been working a lot. We just feel right now we want to keep any traffic intake of at a minimum due to our camp and daycare situation. So we're just going to work around some of those one-on-one programs and not really let anybody in there except for those essential programs that we have at this time. We may change that as it goes on, but as right now we can figure we're able to serve the customers through phone or email or such. So at this time, that's what we have to do. Any questions? In addition, what the administration team is doing right now is that we are, Carol, Lisa, Bobby, and Chris are never really in the same room together anymore. At the beginning, we were, when we didn't have programs going on, we just had meetings 6 feet apart. Now we have separated, so that way if one of us gets sick, there's someone still there that does not have to leave the park district and be on site, could we have emergencies. So While I was always in the office up until about a week ago, now I am staggering with Carol because we have direct office together. But Jenny has been called back and she's back in the office so that she's always there at my phone or Carol's or whatever, or be there to downstairs need assistance. So that's how we're kind of operating on that. So you'll see me in and out, or but Carol and I will never be at the same time, or Bobby and I, or Chris and I at the same time. So until we get to probably phase four, we'll do that. Okay, any questions on that? All right, with that said,
not in particular, but you may be more in tune than others out here. Do you have any sense of when we're moving towards phase four in this section of Illinois? Has there been any insight on that?
No, absolutely not. I think they're going to see how it does in phase three. And based on what happened this week in Chicago and stuff, you may see, or actually, not just Chicago, the whole suburbs, you might take a step back instead of a step forward based on that. So we will see.
Right.
But I don't anticipate that happening in August, but I didn't anticipate phase three happening that fast. So we're planning every contingency for and hopefully turn around things really fast as we go into the next phase.
Yeah, the Tribune has a pretty cool site, phase by phase, showing the statistics of what you need to get into phase four.
Yeah.
And so I was very confused. I'm sure I'm reading it wrong, but it's like, oh, you know, we're hitting all four of the metrics, but I'm sure there's a time frame you can get in that.
Yeah.
The IDPH has an online dashboard, and the time frame, you have to make 28 days to advance to phase four of the statistics at the level that it's at. So that dashboard is like, if you probably looked in a web service report, we probably are checking that dashboard in-house at 2:35 every day after the governor posts the numbers for that day. Everybody's like, get there and check it, see where we're at, you know? So if you haven't had an opportunity to look at the IDPH's website, they have an unbelievable dashboard with transparent information on it.
You do not look at it on a mobile device.
Yeah.
Because the zooms on the maps and things are just missed with the whole site.
Brutal.
That's good information, and I think it's smart that y'all are supporting each other. You know, who knows what's going to happen, so it's good to have, you know, teams like this. And I see you push Chris into his hut in the maintenance.
You know, I cleaned before today's Zoom. I just want you to know that. Yeah.
Nice.
So,
you don't need a new one.
I have a question.
Yes, sir.
We've not had any vandalism or anything like that has happened in some other communities.
Actually, we did have some vandalism last night, and our parks team was so efficient. They cleaned it up before anybody even saw it. It was just some paper signs posted to benches and such, and then sprayed another message of spray paint over that. So we removed all that, and you probably won't even, if they did it so fast, you didn't notice it, which is our, what we do in parking inspections in the morning.
That's great. That's great. Thank you.
There are paper signs all over downtown. You can still see remnants of them. Black Lives Matter. It's kind of a white 8x11 paper.
Yep. That's right.
And I think Dudley, my hunch is today being the big day in the media for representation, you can say it's probably a more targeted day than yesterday or tomorrow.
Well, thank you. The only other thing I want to do is I want to congratulate everyone for being so focused, and the fact that we don't have a lot of questions represents our trust in you.
Thank you.
Oh, well, thank you very much. That's very nice.
You said, Dudley. I
will be sharing a phone call, because we can share our voicemail messages. A very nice call from a resident. I'll be sharing with the board after the meeting. He came in right before our meeting, so it was very nice. And I shared with our administration team, it was probably one of the nicest, thanking us for what we've done as a week, opening and researching future plans. So it was very nice. Okay, so we're going to move on to the discussion of future capital grants, if that's okay?
Yes. Lisa and Chris will lead that discussion.
All right. So I know we brought this up last month, at the last meeting, is that there seems to be a lot of grants coming through, either stimulus grants or fast track grants, which we applied for one, And we know that Osland, there was an attempt to remove Osland from the not funded, but that did, was not successful, so grants are still being funded, and that'll be for next year too. So we just wanted to bring before the board is if there's any appetite, and another board member mentioned, should we look at doing any of those grants and being ready for them, whether it be we have plans ready or shovel ready. And so we kind of just wanted to bring you aware of some of the terminology and what it would cost to get us ready for those grants. So I'm going to turn it over to Chris. And I'll, does everybody
your
else see the same
friend,
picture?
Yeah.
No.
It's your second monitor, Chris.
I'm on the wrong monitor.
I have a whole ski hill, so it kind of threw me off there.
What about now?
No.
Still serious.
All right, let me give this one more shot here.
It's a good thing it was only a mosquito, Chris.
Yeah, right?
There we go.
So yeah, when I said I cleaned my office, I also meant my desktop. So can everybody see?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, excellent. You know, as to what Lisa said, you know, we do believe that recovery stimulus will likely include capital grant initiatives. So for the purposes of this discussion, I just wanted to briefly outline what a site master plan is and what a shovel-ready project is, because they are different. So a site master plan is something that we do to gather board input, community input, and develop a design that we then use to provide estimated unit costs, use it for project budgeting, scope management, and grant planning. So as you may know, these take approximately 5 to 12 months to develop, and the typical cost can be between $25,000 and $35,000. On the flip side, you have what's called like a shovel-ready project. So shovel-ready is, the idea is construction and bid documents are completed. So development to this point typically costs about 10 to 14% of the project budget. So if you had a $1 million project, to get that project shovel-ready might cost between $100,000 and $140,000. So when we went for the trail grant and the Duke Park Ready grant, we were already proceeding with those parks, so they were technically shovel-ready projects. So we were able to say, hey, we have this money budgeted, we're going to execute these projects, this is actually going to happen. So the whole cycle timeline, so to go from an idea in a committee meeting to breaking ground, can take anywhere between 9 and 24 months, depending on the level of permitting necessary, the level of community input, and the level of revisions that we have. So we've outlined here in this memo a number of projects that we have that we've had some dialogue about over the last few years. And these are directly drawn from our asset condition matrix. They're all projects that are below the 20% of expected remaining life. So I won't go into depth reading every single one. As you guys know, we applied for the park grant for Watts. We do have a board approved scope for that project. To go from where we're at, which is a master plan, to being shovel ready, probably run us between 350 and 4 1/4, depending on where we go with that scope. The maintenance center, we're still working on developing a scope, trying to hone that project down to a budget that we think we can execute if there is ever future funding available. In addition, really our only shovel ready unfunded project right now is Veterans Park. That park was included in the Duke Park bid package, although it's not a funded amenity. There's a few other items here, Lakefront Park, retaining walls, drainage. We've had some dialogue about the lights at TAKIF, Cock Park. We had a brief dialogue about West in the last meeting. So at this point, these are kind of, this is an update of where we're at with everything that we've talked about that we haven't taken to construction to this point. So is there any dialogue or questions before I really turn it over to Carol? Because anything, any project that we're going to take past the master plan level is going to require additional funding that may be something we have to kind of figure out where we're going to get that from.
In addition, the reason those projects are on there, those are, we did our critical, looked at the lifespan of those amenities. These are the ones that are 20% of the lifespan is remaining, so they're considered critical. Doesn't mean that they all have to be done or we consider doing them. That's how they got on this list.
Yeah, I mean, to Lisa's point, there is some duplication here. I mean, you know, West Park, while not ideal, it isn't going to fall down. It's not going to pose a danger. So it's really evaluating what's a piece of critical infrastructure versus what's on our want list.
So
are you asking for discussion on this now, or do you have more, like, from Carol or from Eric to talk to?
I just have a little bit more. And so, yeah, given any pursuit of any grant would require us also to go out for bonds for funding these projects. We don't have those debt funds available. So Carol and Eric Anderson are here to give some information about the bonding. So if we turn it over to Carol.
Yeah, and Eric.
So I just want to, basically looking to any large expenditure or any cap, right now I'm, you recall that in the past 7 years we were able to direct extra reserve balances from our corporate and recreation fund to the tune of over $7 million in the last 7 years. And the likelihood of the impact this first year, it definitely doesn't look like we'll be able to do that moving forward next year. So it's in consideration of these projects, I just want you to get the latest update from Eric related to what impact that could mean on the Park District. I wish I could give you a crystal ball and look at what it might take as far as us regaining that financial ability to do it without debt, but I feel like it's important to combine whatever discussion on capital with kind of the latest update from Eric. So as you see, he's on the Zoom, and I will turn it over to Eric right now.
Thank you, Carol. And please jump in with your questions. We have seen interest rates back in late February, first couple of days of March, hit all-time lows at that point, after which we saw probably the biggest dislocation in rates in quite some time, certainly the 26 years I've been doing this. And rates actually tripled to quintuple in that short space of 2 weeks. They've since that time taken their steps down. The Federal Reserve has lowered interest rates by 1.25%. So we are now back to approximately where we were in late February. Maybe just a touch higher. The Illinois penalty is still in play. The state of Illinois issued bonds last month at a very high rate. And so Glencoe Park District, because your name has Illinois in it, pays a little bit more than you should otherwise. But nevertheless, we've developed, I think, four different plans. Anything from $1.5 million, retired over 15 years, keeping taxes exactly the same as they were last year, all the way to $4.3 million, retired over 20 years, and taxes would go up by about $39 for that $800,000 home. We can either do this via a private placement or as a public bond underwriting. Lots of different methods here. If we do select a private placement, we're limited really to 15 years in maturity duration, because buyers, especially banks, aren't going up past that 15th year without losing several of the traditional bidders, and we would see their rates jump up appreciably. So we just did a 15-year transaction a couple of weeks ago. We actually did one today for Kane County, Illinois, and we got nice receptivity on it. So private placement, I know we've not talked about it with the board before, but it certainly is a very viable approach to selling debt if you're so inclined to do so.
All right. So,
Carol, is there any indication of the market in Glencoe, how the real estate market in Glencoe moving? I'm seeing kind of signs of that. Moving, and the reason why I'm asking is I'm just wondering if where that burden of $39 actually comes down because of an influx of new residents buying houses at more expensive rates, or does that math not work? Because I would imagine
if real estate prices go up, they just drop the percentage that they assess you on to get the same amount of money.
Right, but they would go up. Does the real estate, the housing market is doing well, Josh. My theory is, and it's just theory, that you know, if you have five houses that are all worth $1 million here in town, and then one house sells for $1.2 million, everybody who's in the $1 million, their taxes go down. The $1.2 million, his or her taxes go up, which means that when you, the 1.2 million these sort of new taxes, these are taxes go up, which means that when you have this burden of $39 on average, it actually impacts the newer houses that sold faster than the older houses that didn't sell. That makes sense.
What I will tell you is that the whole related to tax levies and actual tax rates is a very convoluted calculation. So just because somebody's house sells for $1.2 million and your house is at $1 million, it all has to do with the old growth and new growth in the, and it's just not really easy to estimate. So really, what we do for purposes of the debt, and Eric has used a fair market value of $800,000, if there are house values that are more than that, they are going to pay more than the $39.
Right. And my thought was that if people are buying, if there's a demand for houses here, like our neighbors, like I know a lot of people that have sold houses lately. If more houses are coming in over that $800,000, those houses will take the burden. If that house rises from $1 million to $1.2 million, that house should take more of the burden than the people who are existing here as well. And so the math should work out that if prices are going up and there's more demand, that the burden still is, on average, $39 for $800,000, let's call it, but there are, it's stratified over more people. And so the burden could be $30 for me instead of $39. It could be, you know, $50 for someone else, as opposed to now where we're both at like sort of 39.
I just don't think it's material, like whether the burden is $30 per $800,000 or $40 per $800,000. It's the story I'm going to tell to our fellow residents is the same.
Well, I mean, you feel it. It's not material. I agree with you on that, but you would have a better story if it was impacting newer people more than it's impacting established.
I don't know, Eric, do you have anything to add to your experience on that?
Sure. I think that the process, as you noted, Carol, is very convoluted. We do have a new assessor in place. His methodologies are a lot different. We're waiting for those numbers to be finalized in Cook County. We need to have multiplier come out. I think that you're correct in that higher homes will bear a larger portion of the overall tax, no doubt about it. That's just the math that you're citing.
I'm trying to figure out if there are more.
How that shifts, I'm not exactly sure. And we'll know that, I guess, probably in a couple of weeks when
Cook County finalizes.
How are we able to have no increase with that smaller amount that you mentioned, the 1.5 million?
Mm-hmm. So the 1.5 over 15 years or 1.9 approximately over 20 years, both would be targeting the levy that the district levied last year, or effectively levy of 2019 at $130,000. So we would just keep that levy constant at that point. So if it is a tax increase, because otherwise doing nothing, that tax would drop to zero. But in this case, we're keeping the tax flat with previous years. The other two options, whether it's 15 or 20 years, would raise the tax. And of course, there's middle ground there as well.
Okay. Eric, by the way, I want to acknowledge your really cool Zoom background that looks just like a really nice porch.
I'm on my porch right now, and I had to turn on all the lights because it is absolutely pitch black here. We're supposed to get 70-mile-an-hour winds and big hail tonight, so I'm up in Madison.
Oh.
Well, close the windows.
Yeah.
Natalie?
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Okay, question. The Cook County assessor is changing the timing on collections. Is that going to have an impact on this at all, or tell us a little more about the timing if we were to move ahead on this?
No, the collection of the second installment is still going to be due August 1. They're waiving the penalty, I believe, on any late payment till October 1. So we might see a shift to the later. We typically see the second installment of tax receipts come through end of July, early August, but it really doesn't have anything to do with the impact of selling bonds on that. We're still paying our last payment on our Watts issue this December, so that's the last payment, and then it will be retired. So any issue that Eric is talking about now really impacts next year's tax levy.
2021.
Yeah. Right. Paid in 2021. It's
yeah.
The 2020 tax levy paid in
2021.
So what's the timeline here? I mean, you're talking to us about, you know, today. How much time do we have to mull this over and consider it and all the rest of it? I mean, obviously rates change constantly.
The conversation today has to do really with what Chris is talking about potential projects. We, if you recall, in February did the BINA hearing, and correct me if I'm wrong, Eric, but I think we have 3 years. It's about...
Correct.
To do the bond issue, but what we're trying to look at is what will the rates do? You know, and quite honestly, we saw CAMP is not going to be running as we saw it. What will be the financial impact of that? What will happen in the fall? We don't know. So that's kind of why I'm a little conservative, but it's the board's call, and it's our job to share information with you, and I think a positive part of this is that when we were looking at doing it in March, now we're kind of right about the same level of where we were. So it's been a quick turnaround. It's just the board's discuss projects that we feel might be out there as far as a grant. And that's where kind of Chris comes in with what those projects are and what are our needs for our current infrastructure moving forward. In the next couple of years, because I don't know how long it's going to take us to regroup from this.
I think that's a very valid point, is you have the grant projects on one hand, which are exciting and new, and then you have your needs. So what are the projects that we have to execute to keep the lights on at the Park District for the next, you know, 1 to 3 years that we had initially intended to fund with those surpluses? So I think that, you know, in asking what are we trying to accomplish tonight, it's saying, you know, do we need to start thinking about what projects are keeping the lights on versus what projects are available out there in the future that we might want to go for a grant?
I just like to throw two ideas out. First is that we don't know what the grant programs are that are going to come down the road here in the next 24 months.
Absolutely.
Right? They could be the very conventional ones. They could, the legislatures, both state and federal, could be very austere, and we could see very few, right? Or we could see unprecedented levels of generosity, for lack of a better term, because particularly the federal government says, holy cow, the economy's completely cratered and isn't coming back, and we need to put people to work. And so I think it's wise for us to have some options that are available should either one of those governments say, we need to put people back to work and we're willing to pay for it. And we don't want to wait 2 years to do it, so we need shovel-ready projects. The second point I would make is that I have always had maybe a excessively nostalgic but positive view of the projects that the Works Progress Administration undertook during the Great Depression. And so I encourage us to think both big and sort of artistically about what we might be able to accomplish if any of those particularly generous grants come through, which is not to suggest that we should prioritize that over keeping the lights on. Chris makes an excellent point there. But we may also want to say, you know, what would people be looking back on in 85 or 100 years and say, geez, I'm glad they built that when they had a chance.
All right, very nicely said.
The listing, oh, go ahead.
I just need to email about the next round of funding for Auslan being swept. So what does that mean? Does that mean that...
That did not happen.
That did not happen.
So...
They take away the funds. They don't provide the funds that they allocated, but that did not happen. Those funds for OSLAB stayed in OSLAB. They did not take them for other things.
And that was in next fiscal year's budget. So that would be the projects that are going to be submitted this year. So the Senate voted to protect that grant program.
Okay. So that was not the Duke Park Playground, correct?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
That's correct. But we were worried they might sweep those too, so not sweeping next year's is really good for this year.
Yeah.
So those contracts are being executed now.
Okay. So, I mean, I think we're all going to feel the same. Well, I shouldn't say that, but, you know, it's hard to take out debt when we're in this environment, but it's also hard not to want to have those ready to go because nothing ever surprises me in government. Even when there's no money, somehow these things do come up. So part of me would hate to not be ready for that and miss out. But the other part, it is, you know, how it looks to be doing that right now and be thinking about those things. And you always have to move forward. And I think you guys have done such a good job in that. In all the uncertainty, you just keep moving forward and pushing the boundary. So... That's the hard part, though. It is too how it looks to be doing these kinds of things. So it's a struggle.
So Lisa, what do you want from the board now?
Well, if they have any interest for staff to come back with a list of critical infrastructure items that we like, maybe put a priority on, things that we feel like we have to keep the lights on, and based on what Josh just said, is there appetite for us to come back and say, these are some of those, wow, there's a tremendous grant that's out there that would fund something. What one, say if we had, because it costs so much to get a shovel project ready, what one do you think would help us or set us apart, you know, 80 years from now, they said, wow, they did this project. We could come with a recommendation of that so the board can decide if they would like to spend that money future infrastructure. I mean, staff is really realistic. In the past, boy, since I've been here seven plus years, we have funded most of our capital projects through our fund balance reserves that were taken from the net of our recreation programs. And we don't see that happening. It's going to take us a couple years to regroup and be able to get back on that track, at least until probably there's a vaccine. So we're very realistic about that to tell you that we're not going to have that money coming into that capital projects account. So we have to have some money in that fund balance reserve that goes for keeping the lights on project, replacing roofs and stuff like that. So, but there may be a chance for some spectacular grant that if it's fully funded or 95% funded, it'd be the same if we were ready for that too. It's a risk because as Cheryl always says, we could spend $300,000, $400,000 on a plan to get shovel ready, and then it sets on a shelf because there was never that funding. So, I mean, to be honest, there's that risk there too, that we spend money that never gets spent, that project never goes to fulfillment. Not to say that it won't someday, it would have to be tweaked if that didn't happen, but that's a risk, and so you have to go in that with eyes wide open. But a lot of times, that's when great projects get done, is when those boards take those risks. So we'd really have, I think it's just something to start thinking about and maybe come back at the next committee meeting and just talk about some of those projects and talk about if you'd want to do that, really mull it over and think what your appetite for risk on this, what your appetite for the perception that will be in the community by spending that money, things like that. So I don't need an answer now. This is kind of just let's start thinking about it
There's a risk, obviously, of rates going up. They're low right now, so that's a risk, too. But we also, if we do those bonds, we have to spend it within, what, 2 or 3 years, Carol?
Three years.
So we'd have to be willing to spend that money, too. You can't just take it and put it in the bank and not say, okay, we don't want to spend it. We'd have to spend it on projects. We want to make it clear what those projects would be.
May I ask Eric a quick question, Eric? You know, of course, this is like a rate play. How urgent is it that we make a decision on this? And you know, I might think that rates are going to be suppressed because they got to get the economy going and so forth, but I'm just a fool. I don't know anything. What is your wise counsel? Like, what do you think we can anticipate in terms of how long we can drag our feet and sort of see, you know, have more information in front of us before we make a decision?
Sure. Well, I don't think anybody believes that the Federal Reserve will be increasing interest rates anytime soon, certainly not in 2020. However, the market does the work for the Fed. And as we saw in March, we saw a week where every day rates were going up by 50 basis points. Now, I don't remember here who said it, but I think they were surprised at how quickly things have are returning to a more normalized setting. I'm very surprised how fast rates have come back. And that's really that liquidity that the Fed provided in terms of, I don't remember if it was $2 or $3 trillion, but you know, that came into the market a couple of months ago, and that seems to have calmed down things pretty dramatically. It being that every day we seem to have a brand new headline that's surprising, it would be a little bit of a fool's errand, to use your phrasing, for me to tell you I think that rates are going to stay where they are or trend, you know, upward or downward. I do think that there's more pressure for rates to remain lower than higher at this point. We've seen CPI, by the way, the last 2 months be very, very low, back negative. And a lot of the articles that I'm reading right now suggest that inflation will be really raising its head again in a somewhat prompt manner, led by food. If that's the case, it could suggest that interest rates go up. So I think what Lisa said earlier is we're giving you some information to chew on. Obviously, there's no action that we're looking for tonight. If you have some guidance, great. We're already prepared. We, back in March, Carol gave us really guidance and said, hey, you know what, let's not go and spend the money with Moody's right now to get our bond rating when we're uncertain as to what the overall plan is. But other than getting a bond rating, if we do need one, we're largely done in terms of what we need to do statutorily to be able to issue. So when the board feels comfortable to provide the direction, and if it's to issue debt, will take us a very short period of time to ultimately act upon.
Okay.
So, I don't, not to suggest that $1.5 million is not a lot of money, but we will spend that easily in the next 3 years, even if we don't do some big project. You know, you all know a playground costs $400,000, and you know, Chris has got a list of four of them that are about to fall down any day now. And so I have absolutely no doubt that we'd spend $1.5 million over the next 3 years. You know, to me, that's a gimme. We could have a discussion about whether we should get $4.3 million, but I don't think it's a hard conversation to have with residents that we held your taxes steady.
Right.
There are, beyond those keep the lights on projects or the keep the playgrounds from falling down projects, there are bigger projects that I'm very confident are going to get done, if not under, you know, this board's watch, under the next board's watch. And that's, for instance, the maintenance garage is, you know, that tour had a big impression on me, obviously. I think we're going to spend that money. Whether we spend it 2 years from now or 4 years from now, that's to me, it's pretty clear that's going to happen. And so I don't view personally that, like, that kind of, like, developing a bid document for that, I don't view that as particularly risky, because it's going to happen 2 years from now or 4 years from now. And with, just to wrap up then, with respect to, like, the big plan or the big deal, the aspirational one, I'm not sure I see it on this list. I don't think, Lisa, you were suggesting that it was on this list, but I would suggest that the zeitgeist is more sort of sustainability and environmental. So if there's, you know, if there's something to go for there, it's probably not pouring 3 million tons of concrete. It's probably, you know, something supporting the active transportation plan or restoring, you know, fields that we have to forest or prairie or improving drainage or, you know, something like that seems more in tune with the zeitgeist, at least speaking for myself, than, you know, than a lot of concrete.
Okay. All right. Does anyone else, Dudley, do you have something you'd like to add?
The only thing I'd like to add is thinking about timing. And for instance, we have some projects, for instance, the Veterans Park. We have that totally shovel-ready, but the project is not currently funded. Well, we may be able to get a grant for that, or we may be able to get a donor for that. I think we have a high probability in that particular area, as opposed to developing the scope on one or two of the other projects. So I think we'll have to make some decisions looking at these projects in conjunction with all the other things that's on our draft capital improvements plan, and picking out a few that we think we want to move ahead.
Okay. Michael, would you like to add?
Yeah, I will be brief. I agree with Josh that we could probably spend 1.6, whatever the number was, pretty quickly. But I think there's essentially three scenarios, and Bobby and Lisa know that my mind works in decision trees. And you've got sort of three choices here. You've got do nothing, which is kind of let the Watts debt go out, give a dividend back to the taxpayer, let's call it, which I don't think is the right move. You can either get the 1.5 million in cash and kind of keep flat the taxpayer, and you know, put a little padding in your pocket for to make up for, quite frankly, the lost recreational surpluses. Or you kind of go for that big bang of the 4.2, 3, 4, 5 million. I don't recall exactly, Eric, what you said. And I effectively think that, you know, those are our choices. Like, I don't, unless I'm missing something, it seems like those are the three choices, and I would keep the do nothing on the table. I like to have the extremes over here just so I can say, you know what, this is not what I want to do. But I think it ultimately becomes those three things. And so I would probably, Lisa, Shepherd, take a look at what you can and can't do under those three scenarios. And it's actually one scenario, right? And it's just, here's our projects. 4.5, yes, yes, yes. 1.5, yes, yes, no, no, no. You know, do nothing. Maybe no, 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 no. And I think that would be enlightening. I will tell you, I think the other boards are facing this issue as well. Another friend of mine's on a school board, and the school board's going through exactly the same thing right now. Eric, I don't know if you represent Glencoe schools, but they're having the exact same question. Like, do we leave our mark now? You know, are we going to get grants? Is it? And there's no easy answer. And so while I do think that us adding 40 or 50 bucks on, but if the school adds 40 or 50 bucks on, and the library adds 40 or 50 bucks on, and the village adds 40 or 50 bucks on, it becomes 200 bucks. Not to say that we shouldn't do it, but we just need to be thoughtful about that. I don't think we can obviously work in concert. So these aren't easy decisions. Luckily, I think even at 200 bucks, you know, these aren't catastrophic, you know, decisions. But we just have to figure out what our options are, what we want to do. So that's my two cents on this.
And you do like your decision trees, Michael.
I do. That's just,
I'm okay. I'm good with that. I like that too.
Lisa or Carol, can you also outline, current, if this goes into perpetuity, the stay-at-home thing, which I don't think it will, what we think the shortfall from recreational support for capital funding would be, just to kind of have that in the back of our minds. Because I don't know if it's $300,000 a year or $700,000 a year.
I've actually worked on updating the master plan, and also will provide an updated projection now that made for the June 16th board meeting. So
I will tell you, I like to bring in my work experience here, because I think that we end up, the airlines end up being a little bit of an indicator. We are seeing signs of green shoots. They are like really, really small green shoots, but we are seeing signs there. Like we upped our forecast for June significantly. I do think people are getting out. I think people are frustrated. I think people are looking for activity. So my hunch is that A, rates will stay down, Eric. But my hunch is also that you'll see a faster return to some of these recreational things if done correctly than I think we probably anticipate. And it's good to hope for the best and plan for the worst, but I do think that we're going to, the green shoots are coming.
Good. I'm glad to hear that. Remember
what Dr. Fauci says, the virus will decide.
We have, I can assure you, just like many other large companies out there in this world, we have tons of research and we have our own medical staff too that does the things. Apparently now there's more insight about the transmission of it, that the 6 feet is actually pretty
inadequate.
You probably 2 to 3 feet is probably all you really need. And so the more time, and I think we'll get a vaccine in the next year. So.
That's still 3 times more than I have on an airplane, Michael.
Middle seat's clear. Okay. Stephanie, did you want to ask?
That's rough. All right. Who is this?
No, I do agree with Michael. I think that people are starting to trust a little and venture out, and I do feel that people are staying closer to home. And traveling, Michael. I do hear a lot about traveling, but trusting programs, a lot of the camps are reopening, but a lot of people don't want to send their kid on the bus with a mask. They don't want to send them to a big program. So I think that's what's going to come. I think that what you're offering in June, I wouldn't be surprised if you get a really big registration. Could be wrong, but I would not be surprised.
I'm not going to be surprised either, because I think people are seeing that we're being very thoughtful in our execution of everything, and as time goes on, they'll trust more and more that we're doing it in a very methodical way, so I agree.
So to sum it up, continue on the path you're on, which is to stay nimble and be prepared to pounce at any time, which really plays into the board needing to think about the stuff they have to decide,
exactly.
Which is how ready are we going to be to pounce if this grant money presents itself, and what risk are we willing to take to have what projects ready to go. And I will say, I don't know who now mentioned the maintenance garage, I think it was Josh, but clearly that is something that probably isn't going to need to be revised over and over again as in the next 2 to 4 years, so it probably is something that floats to the top as being worthy of having something ready, but that's just a thought, and we'll discuss more in our next committee meeting if that sounds
good. We'll disagree with that.
Well, now that you've cleaned it up, you don't need it anymore, liar.
Yeah, exactly, now you're thinking.
Okay. All right, it's a great summation, Lisa, thank you.
All right, so Eric, does anyone have anything else for Mr. Anderson?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you, Eric.
Thank you.
Thanks, Eric.
Thank you, everyone.
You're very good. Thank you.
And the storm is just rolling in here, so it's perfect.
All right. Close your windows.
Cover.
Hey, stay safe.
Hey.
Thanks. Bye now.
Bye.
All righty then. Lisa Shepherd, other business.
There's no other business. I don't know what he's saying, but I have no other business.
You have no other business. Okay.
I'm good.
Okay, does anyone else have anything they didn't have an opportunity to say? All righty. Well then, I entertain a motion to adjourn.
Okay.
Ludden and then Boren?
Yeah, I think Boren, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
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 Aye. All right.
Okay. Motion passes. Thank
Thanks,
you.
Everyone.
Thank you all.